Hi, welcome to the Whole Therapist Podcast. We're leaving out the theorizing and exploring this strange phenomenon of being a human and a therapist. I'm Kelly, licensed marriage and family therapist, working in private practice settings as a clinician and a clinical supervisor in the Denver metro area.
And I'm Abby. I'm a licensed clinical social worker and the owner of a group practice in the Denver metro area. Kelly and I are both registered play therapists, supervisors, and EMDR certified. So we're both therapists, but this is not therapy. And we're both supervisors, but this is not supervision. This podcast is purely for fun. So for any ethical concerns on your caseload, please refer to your state laws and licensing boards.
And please remember to follow The Whole Therapist on Instagram, Facebook, and subscribe on your favorite podcast listening station. For more resources, blogs, and consultation opportunities, visit wholetherapistinstitute.com.
So come join our conversation while we explore the embodied experience of neuroscience and authenticity in the therapy room.
Hi, welcome to The Whole Therapist Podcast. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Abby.
We're excited to have you all with us today. We are moving back into our summer book series, although we are...
Seasonal book series.
Yeah, we're changing it to seasonal because we're quickly approaching fall.
I know. I mean, summer's basic. It's over. Yeah. Okay.
For me, I know that fall is not till September, October, but school has always resembled fall for me. So when school started in August, that's when it was fall.
So welcome to our seasonal, multi-seasonal book series.
Yeah. So we're at chapter four, which I don't even see what the title was for chapter
four. It's just called Surface Narratives and Deep Narrative. This is a good one. We're going to do two parts. So this is part one. For one chapter. We're going through it even slower, actually.
We are.
We were like, we're going to lump in a few chapters next time, and we're doing the opposite.
We are. We're slowing it down. But as we read it and review it, there's so much in this chapter.
Yeah.
And some of it's not even totally concrete for the two of us.
Which has been really enlivening, I think, to sit down and wonder together as we've read and reread and now share with all of you. I think a lot of Cozzolino's words or any IPNB literature, it will, this is probably true, right? It will bump up against exactly where you are in your own work.
Yes.
We can only make sense of it as far as we've gone. So in a year, we would certainly have a different take on this chapter.
Yeah, that actually might be fun to do. We can hold ourselves accountable that we'll come back to this chapter in a year. Okay. But Abby and I are both in the thick of doing our own kind of family work. But something that I was kind of thinking about as we were introducing this to you is that chapter three, there was a focus over this process over content. And as I was talking about that with Abby, you know, she was saying, yeah, I think it was really kind of skills-based. Chapter three is much more concrete. And chapter four is this surface level versus a deeper surface level narrative. What we were sharing was, this is more about the stories.
Feels like the juiciness of therapy work, right? Moving from skills to stories. And I think you and I are both really biased towards narrative work in general. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Just thinking about things in terms of stories and knowing that we can restory things. And I don't have any like formal training in narrative therapy.
Me neither.
But I do
we'll
find myself.
Yeah.
And before we dive in, I want to check in and just say that we have maybe been talking for a little over an hour, and I've cried multiple times prior to recording. So today, the day that we're recording, is Sunday the 28th, and then I am getting married on Monday, September 5th.
It's a week from tomorrow.
Yeah. We're like 8 days out.
Yeah.
And there's also just like lots of other changes that are going to be happening right before the wedding and after the wedding. And so I think I'm just like in a very emotional spot. And so this might be the day where I'm just crying on this podcast.
I think it's all so welcome here.
Yeah.
And for the tender places in us to meet the tender places in all of you would be our hope. And the celebratory, I cannot wait. We'll take some pictures. Maybe I'll take some pictures and put them on the
You don't need to do any of the social media on your wedding, but I can put them on there of us dancing and eating and celebrating you and Alex.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that also might be good for listeners to know too, that we might have a pause, or like the way that we release the episodes also might be different after we get married. My partner and I are going to go straight to Turkey for the rest of the month of September.
Yeah.
So the next couple episodes are going to look different.
Kelly does our social media and I do not. And so I won't be, and you're not allowed to while you're in Turkey. So you will also notice our Instagram and Facebook will be on pause, and we're going to do our best with episodes. But I think we've kind of eased listeners into some of that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you have felt into, we give ourselves more grace this summer around releasing when we can.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's probably something around a story there. How do you feel that way towards the podcast? We need to come with inspiration every time, or mm-hmm. we don't have a story this time, or we don't have.
Well, what comes up for me that he talked about in this chapter is that sometimes we use like workaholics, right?
Yes.
Workaholic. I think he said workaholic in there. We use that as a way to not go deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I think I could speak for both of us, but let me know if I'm wrong. Like we both can relate to that of like work.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last year, you and I have done a lot of great trainings. We did with the Dan Siegel, and this, you've done the in-person with Bonnie Badnock, mm-hmm. and I've been doing the year long online. And I just feel okay and so much better slowing down.
Isn't that amazing?
It is, because I remember when I went to my therapist about 2 years ago, I told her, I'm afraid if I slow down, like what that means, what will happen? Like, I like that I have the capacity to do all of this. So will I still be able to do all these things? And the reality is, like, I just like, don't want to do all of them now.
Yeah.
There's other things I want to do, but there's this sense of I'm going to be okay if it slows down. I'm still going to get to things I want to do if I slow down.
There's so many other things to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a broadening. I think of those panoramic pictures. Like you can take in more of life mm-hmm. when you slow down, or see like, oh, and the world didn't end and I didn't die and I wasn't worthless, or whatever that deeper story was. I still belonged even when I slowed down. Or I think it makes the podcast that much more sweet when we show up. Because it's not from a place of like work, mm-hmm. which I don't know that it ever was, but maybe parts of it. Like I think Kelly and I, we connected over like flexing our capacity.
Yeah.
At first, we would relate to each other. Like we can just work really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to have a parallel process of working more deeply, but less hard.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I even think with this surface level, like if I were to come into therapy, and actually I have came into therapy, and right, like I'm so stressed out and here's all the things I'm doing and here's all the things that I'm planning on doing. And I could have a therapist that just sits in that with me and maybe gives me some coping skills, right, about how to like manage my stress and self-care. But if you have a therapist who could be deeply attuned, and what he talks about in the beginning here, not having divided attention.
Yes.
But if you can have undivided attention, which is very difficult
right.
in the kind of generation era that we're in with so much technology, that the therapist could begin to ask, and why, what need is this fulfilling?
Mm-hmm.
How is this helping you to stay so busy and so stressed out?
What does it mean about you if you slowed down?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's where this deeper story comes.
And it's interesting to notice how you yourself respond to those kinds of questions from a therapist, or how your client responds. Do they start talking faster,
mm-hmm.
deflect into more content
mm-hmm.
or surface level? Or is there like a silence and a, can they be with it in their body?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. An example, I guess, for a client would be, maybe this client is sharing how they are really overprotective of folks. Maybe they share that they are constantly thinking, they're overthinking things. They are planning out every scenario that might happen. They are, there's like a DBT word for it, but where it's like your mind reading, or you like, I knew that was going to happen. Mm. I foresaw that happening.
Yeah.
And if we just stick with that surface, again, we could let clients just process that. And I think for some people, it feels good to have a space to just unload that. If they don't have anywhere else, like it does feel good to just get it out, right? It's energy that's stored in the body. It might feel nice to just talk about that. But if we really want work, I think, to stick and have these like long-term impacts, positive impacts, then we have to go deeper. And what he's talking about in this chapter is we have to know family of origin stories in order to understand why people are functioning the way they are.
I'm just agreeing with everything you're saying. Nodding my head like, yep, yes. Yeah.
So what might be the family of origin story for this client, right? So it might be something like they grew up in a home where they had to be hypervigilant. Maybe there was domestic violence. Maybe it was two parents that were drug addicts or alcoholics.
Yeah.
Right. You had to learn as a child then that you have to take care of yourself. You learned that protective part. Mm-hmm. You learned how to read the room and people really quickly to make sure that you were safe.
Yeah.
And you learned I better plan for every scenario so I stay safe.
Right.
So if you don't know this family of origin story, I don't know how you would make sense of these symptoms.
Probably get thrown into the skills-based, solution-focused models, right? If you didn't know, then I would imagine, does it feel true, Kelly, as we're talking this out, that when a client is kind of dumping like content, that's very left hemisphere for the client?
Yes.
And then I think that as therapists, we can collude with that with our left hemisphere by giving strategies.
Yes.
Strategies are helpful.
Yes.
I'm not trying to villainize that, but to lose the what we talked about a few episodes ago, that shuttling as the client sharing the content, what is happening in me as the therapist or the supervisor in my body to allow the right to unfold with what's in the room.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that that can be helpful. So if you don't have formal training on family dynamics or family therapy or narrative therapy, but paying attention to the somatic clues of what that energy, what's the quality of the energy that the client's sharing? Because even like there's critiques on catharsis models. So for someone to just dump, it's like, well, then the energy's just circulating in the room. It's not transformed into anything else. So it could be a release and yet it's not. Is it shifted?
Right. It's like when we maybe get angry at somebody and we scream, like it feels really good momentarily.
Sure.
But it actually may have created something even worse of a rupture.
Yeah, right.
I'm curious what you think about this. I've noticed as we've been reading this book and doing some of this work with Bonnie Badenoch, is I will hear a client, they'll be in session and they are in this surface level narrative, right? Or they're in this content portion of the therapy. And sometimes I will let them go for quite a while. They've said quite a few things. But usually at the beginning of this narrative that they started, they actually have said what they want to work on. Mm-hmm. And I hear it right away, but then I let them keep going. Once there is a feeling of feeling like that I could pause, I actually just go back to the very first thing they said.
Yeah.
And I think I do that because I want to, again, what he talked about in these other chapters, I can make a hypothesis really quickly and then my own agenda could come in. Mm-hmm. So I'm holding this phrase that this client has said. I almost every time notice like they start with what they want to work on, but move real quickly into content or surface level narrative. And so I want to be attuned enough to see if I've missed something or if there's something more that they're going to get to. But more often than not, I guess I could go two routes. I could either say, wow, and let's just notice the energy that's in here now or what's happening somatically as you're talking about all this. Or the other piece is I'll go to, and I'm noticing what you said at the beginning of all of that. You said, blah, 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 blah. Tell me more about that. I'm just curious like what your thoughts are on, is one route better than the other, right? Do we actually continue to stay with the energy and the somatic work and we're just going to stay right where the client is? Or do we lead it back? When you hear it, you hear the deeper level at the beginning of all of this.
I wonder if they're all the same holding, right? Because as you're talking, I'm thinking about how the client feels held in either way.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think you were sharing that maybe it was like chapter one or a different episode a few weeks ago around attunement to the themes.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a deeper level of theme attunement and like, okay, here's kind of what the client's bringing in.
Mm-hmm.
Even if there aren't words or the keywords they say land different.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if it's an either or, but I know that the client needs to be held and we get to follow in either sense. I kind of lean towards what you're saying in terms of letting them absolutely share and following that energy, but they have typically, and I think Cozzolino talks about that later in the chapter, how clients know, very highly resourced clients will know what they want to work on. And it's more about the what's in their way or the why it's been hard. They will often name it. It's so true.
Yeah. And we've talked about that in like a trauma episode.
Yes.
Of folks will come in and say, this is what I want to work on.
Right.
And there are lots of parts that people are not even aware of mm-hmm. that are going to protect them from working on that trauma because these parts believe that this is the safest thing to do.
And that's what's being held.
Right.
So if a client needs to talk because they hold a belief that they can't be heard, they won't be heard. Like I've worked with people who keep talking
mm-hmm.
very fast
because mm-hmm.
if they slow down, they feel dropped.
Yes.
Right. And so then I'm holding that little child inside of them that needs to be heard
mm-hmm.
As they're sharing.
Yeah.
But I'm not colluding with the content of what they're saying.
Right.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. that would go back to family of origin work too.
Yes.
Why might this client be talking so quickly and need to say so much? Are they the youngest child in the family and they weren't heard very often, or maybe even the middle child?
Yeah.
Was it a family culture where there was like really loud and for whatever reason, they happened to be the person in the family was really quiet. And so they didn't get heard a lot. And if we can get to know those family of origin stories, I think for me, it helps me have some compassion for the client. It helps me not take some of the protective parts that come in personally.
Yeah.
Because I know why they're there. I know how it's helped them for so long.
And how adaptive and brilliant and needed. It feels like they're even right now in this moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It makes me think of that deep listening idea in all of IP&B. Is that in this book too? Deep listening?
I know that in Bonnie's,
is that what it is?
Yeah. She talks about this.
I've just heard that it must be a Bonnie phrase, but it lives strongly in me. And I'm thinking about this article I just read on playful listening. We'll link it in the show notes, but it's a practice that talks about all the ways to take in our interconnectedness via sound. And one of the things that they talk about that reminded me was how you can listen with your bones. This is why I like those headphones that are bone conductor, you know, work, and talks about how sound, if we trace back the origin of sound, it's really just refracted light.
Yeah.
So to be in, to sunbathe is to remember. And anyway, there was just something we can link it and it has nothing to do with therapy, but as we're talking about deep listening and I'm hearing you share, it makes me think of like, if even our bones could attune to what the client's saying, or if we could even feel into the light and the vibration. It's very woo sounding, but it's actually science.
Yeah.
of what they're talking about, and to deeply be with what's arising in us as they share is so much more than the words.
Yes.
Which I think therapists love words.
Yeah.
I mean, we do.
Yes. Yeah.
Totally guilty. Yes. Like we love the words, and that's not the story.
And that's what Cozzolino is also talking about, that we can't do that if we don't have undivided attention.
Yes.
And there is so much now. There's so much social media where we've got our watches on our wrists that are attached to notifications. Our phones are there.
Yeah.
I do put my phone on airplane mode mm-hmm. when I'm in sessions because I hear the buzzing.
Yeah.
The undivided attention is gone.
It's gone. Yep.
Yeah.
Right. And so maybe we would end this part one with the question of how are you finding your attention enters the therapy room? And in what ways has it been divided? And how does that serve a need, implicitly even, to have divided attention as mm-hmm. a therapist?
Mm-hmm.
And are there any subtle shifts, like airplane mode, to move towards undivided attention and deep listening and radical presence with your people?
Yeah, and I really want us to be able to think about that question before moving into listening to this part two, because part two we want to move into, and so then how do we begin to cultivate that for a client?
Yeah.
How do we help them move into deep presence, undivided attention, so that they can begin to explore their family of origin stories, what's happening for them in the moment as they're talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But let's start with us first in this question.
Yeah, what need does it meet in you to have divided attention? And what shifts can we make? I'm going to be biased and say in relationship.
Mm-hmm.
What shifts can we make in relationship to move towards undivided attention? We'll see you in a couple weeks.